You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, October 28, 2018, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I'm a bit concerned about what happens every time I speak. We sing that song 366. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this hour. I don't know who's behind that. I didn't pick that song. A recent email tells me that sermons only connect with one out of four people. I don't think that's true for this church. But if it is, it means that 75% of you will be bored this morning. And that bothered me. So I went on to, the site went on to offer a webinar course on effective preaching, which I didn't take, as will become obvious this morning. But I Googled an effective preaching site, and amongst other things they said, before speaking on a text, read the text aloud at least four times. Well, I did that. And listened to some good sermons, like from Joel Osteen. At that point, I turned off my... Well, my process of doing a preparation for a day like this morning is a long, arduous one. I start off with an idea. I think it might have some potential. I start reading about it and reading scripture, making some notes and so on, and then I put it away for a couple of weeks. Then I go back and look at it and see how bad it is and decide what to do with it. And one of the things I do occasionally is send a draft of what I am planning to say to my friend Peter in Manitoba. Peter is theologically trained, and he's physically disabled. He can't go to church anymore, but he's a very avid theology reader. So he knows his stuff better than I ever will. Well, he wrote back almost immediately with his initial reaction. I have read your proposed sermon, and my immediate response is, this is not a sermon. It's a lecture. Well, with no theological sermon, no theological training, I've never learned how to do a sermon. And I'm not an academic, and I don't know how to do a lecture. So, lecture or sermon, whatever this is what you're going to get. Then he goes on. Too many facts. You lost me right off the bat. I apologize for being so blunt, but you asked. I'll say more tomorrow. And he did send a lengthier email that was quite helpful. And some of his ideas are incorporated in this sermon. Well, it was some years ago that I realized that we have two creation accounts in Genesis. These two accounts must have been included for a reason. If they were identical, there would be no point in including them. The second Genesis account comes later than the first. It comes out of the time when the Israelites were in captivity in Babylonia. And it's an attempt to conquer the Babylonian myth of creation, which is readily available and interesting. Genesis 1 is concerned with the creation and the entire cosmos. Genesis 2 focuses more on man as being a moral agent who's told to cultivate the environment. Genesis 2 gives a location of Eden and mentions four rivers. Eden is not mentioned in Genesis 1. So if we compare the two texts, we find that Genesis 1 describes creation with what we might describe as a wide-angle view. Genesis 2 focuses more on the people. they are two effects, two accounts, and two views of creation. Well, they are not scientific texts, so they don't have to match each other in every detail. They are stories that each contain truths, and they complement each other. And the internet has hundreds, if not thousands, of sites addressing this very issue of these two accounts of Genesis. I came across the writings of a Jewish rabbi who provides an explanation for the two accounts that appealed to me. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitch studied the two passages and he called them Adam 1 and Adam 2. And here's how he describes the two accounts in a 1965 essay entitled The Lonely Man of Faith. And if you want to read that entire essay, talk to John Friesen. He has the book. Here's what he says. Adam 1 is created together with Eve. They are given the mandate to subdue nature, master the cosmos, transform the world into a domain for their power and sovereignty. Adam 1 is majestic man who approaches the world and relationships, even with the divine, in functional and pragmatic terms. Adam 1, created in the image of God, fulfills this apparently secular mandate by conquering the universe, imposing his knowledge, technology, and cultural institutions on the world. The human community depicted in Genesis 1 is a utilitarian one, where man and woman join together like the male and female of other animals to further the ends of the species. In chapter 2 of Genesis, Adam 2 represents the lonely man of faith, bringing a redemptive interpretation to the meaning of existence. Adam 2 does not subdue the garden, but rather tills it and preserves it. This type of human being is introduced by the words, "It is not good for man to be alone." And through his sacrifice of a metaphoric rib, he gains companionship and a relief of his existential loneliness. This covenantal community requires the participation of the divine. That's the end of the rabbi's quote. Well, in looking at these two creation accounts, David Brooks, who's a columnist for the New York Times, says that they represent two opposing sides of creation. And Brooks opens his book, The Road to Character, by comparing Adam 1 and Adam 2. He says one describes resume virtues and the other eulogy virtues. Resume virtues are what we list on our resumes: education, work experience, hobbies, and other basic data. These are our Adam 1 qualities. Eulogy virtues, Brooks says, are the kinds of things that get talked about at your funeral. They include characteristics like courage, honesty, faithfulness, kindness, service to humanity. The more humane qualities are the Adam 2 qualities. Well, most of us and our society consider the resume virtues more important than the eulogy virtues. We are centered on attaining success and happiness. Our education system considers the resume attributes as the important virtues and pays almost no attention to personal virtues. There are books and professionals to help us prepare resumes, our Adam 1 picture, but there are no similar programs in place to help us develop our characters. Most of us have a clear strategy aimed at achieving career success. We don't have strategies for developing our characters, our personality, our Adam 2. Adam 1 is career-oriented, ambitious, the resume type. It's our external self, how we present ourselves to the world and how we want others to see us. Adam 1 wants to produce things, to create, to control, to achieve some status and to win. In short, to be what we would call successful. What others think of us is important. Adam 1 follows a command to subdue the earth and have dominion over all creatures. Control. That's the path to progress. Adam 1 is hardworking and savors success, education, a good job, and recognition of accomplishments. And we need to acknowledge that in our early years, we spend, and we need to spend, a lot of energy growing up, getting an education, and raising a family. After all, these are the Adam 1 virtues that we need to develop. And after all, Jesus' pattern was that he spent 10 to 15 years working as a carpenter before he embarked on his ministry. Adam 2 is the internal Adam. Adam 2 wants to develop certain moral qualities. Adam 2 can be described as having a serene inner character, a solid sense of right and wrong, a desire to not only do good, but also to be good. Adam 2 responds to a calling, responds to an urge to serve others and the world, to love, to sacrifice for others, to live in obedience, to live in obedience to something transcendent, to follow some higher truth. Adam 2 might renounce success and status typical of Adam 1. Think of John Vanier. Adam 1 asks, what can we do with these things? Adam 2 looks for a sacred purpose in life. Now, this description of Adam 1 and Adam 2 reminded me of Gail Sheehy's 1974 book, Passages. And she noticed that there were a lot of books on the child development describing in detail what happened to a child as they grow through the various stages. And she described predictable behavior for people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. She analyzes each of those stages. And she describes people in their 40s as good years for those who can let go of earlier goals and career aspirations, find a renewal of purpose, the search for Adam 2. Adam 1 lives by a straightforward utilitarian logic, the logic of economics. Input leads to output, effort leads to reward. Pursue self-interest, concentrate on your career. To succeed, you have to compete. Promote and advertise yourself. Our culture encourages and rewards Adam 1 behavior. Success leads to pride. Look at what I have achieved. Look at my impressive resume. Adam 2 lives by a different logic, a moral, not economic logic. You give to receive. You surrender to a belief in something greater than yourself. In order to fulfill yourself, you have to forget yourself. To find yourself, lose yourself. The focus is on others. Adam, too, has a quiet and solid sense of right and wrong. Well, we all live with frequent contradictions and the internal competition between the two Adams. The outer majestic Adam and the inner humble Adam. Both Adams have demands on us, and we must forever master the art of living with a tension between the two. We have some of each Adam in us, and our lives are on a trajectory, hopefully toward the growth of our Adam 2. A personal example of my Adam 1 side. We had been working in a Thai refugee camp for 3 or 4 months. There were probably about 50 or 60 other foreigners from a variety of countries working there as well. And we often had lunch together. One day I commented to Tina that in the months we had been there, no one had asked us what we had done prior to coming to Asia. No one. Some assumed that because we worked for a Christian agency that I was a clergyman. Well, I readily disabused them of that notion. Obviously, our past was not important. My resume, my Adam 1 side, didn't matter. Now, if it wasn't important to others, why should it matter to me? So I asked Tina, what does it say about me that I even noticed that no one asked about my past? Is this so important to me that I should even talk about it? Tina, as usual, was quite perceptive and suggested vanity and pride. I was not amused. But as usual, she was right. My question reflected my Adam 1 component. My resume was important to me. It was not important to others. It seemed that all foreign workers at the camp started off with a blank slate, one's resume. or Adam one passed was of no interest. What one did in refugee work was important. Past accomplishments, no matter how grandiose, were irrelevant. You start from square one and develop your reputation. Clearly, I was concerned with my Adam One image, and I was shocked by my selfishness. In the book I mentioned earlier, A Road to Character, New York Times columnist David Brooks is revealingly honest about why he wrote the book, his Adam One side. And I've asked Jonathan to read a paragraph from that book.
I wrote it, to be honest, to save my own soul. I was born with a natural disposition towards shallowness. I now work as pundit and columnist. I'm paid to be a narcissistic blowhard for bawling my opinions to appear better and more authoritative than I really am. I have to work harder than most people to avoid a life of smug superficiality. I've also become more aware that, like many people these days, I have lived a life of vague moral aspiration, vaguely wanting to be good, vaguely wanting to serve a larger purpose, while lacking a concrete moral vocabulary, clear understanding of how to live a rich inner life, or even a clear understanding of how character is developed and death achieved.
Well, like I said, our society encourages the Adam One development, the external Adam. We should think about a lucrative career, about recognition by our peers, about expanding our Facebook friends, about our CV. Adam One focuses on career advancement. Adam Two asks the question, at what point do my talents and training meet the world's needs? As Bill Gates said, it's the kind of question we can ask any day, not just on those milestone birthdays. That question can remind us to pay attention to our neighbors around the world. It can help us hear the voice of Adam too. So we need to develop our Adam II side. And sometimes a midlife crisis jolts us to rethink life. Adam One lives by the motto of building, creating, producing. You give in order to receive. Success leads to wealth and pride. Failure is merely postponed success. It's an opportunity to try again and be successful. Adam One says, do whatever makes you happy. Adam Two says, you need a goal other than happiness, a goal beyond yourself, a greater cause and inner depth. We need to surrender to a greater cause, and happiness might be the byproduct of our efforts. It should not be the goal. Jesus had some practical suggestions. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men. Love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor. Jesus taught the way of humility and servanthood, and he gave us some suggestions about how we should live. The humblest, he said, are the greatest. The real substance of faith lies in the world of action. Becoming Adam II entails learning such things as how to be slow to judge others and to first check for the log in my own eye, and how, when we are aggrieved, to forgive others. It's the path that Jesus taught. So, at this point, the 75% of you that are bored can look forward to lunch. I have one other comment I want to make. At least three people in this church, John, Henry Klippenstein, and I have read this book, Road to Character, by David Brooks. Henry and I read it around the same time we're talking about it, and a couple weeks ago, when it appeared in the bulletin that I was speaking Adam 1 or Adam 2, he came to me and he said, I was working on a sermon on that. And I said, well, I guess I beat you to it. So look forward to a better sermon on Adam 1 or Adam 2.